horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bay.
A very good Monday race fan, Sirius 219, XM 201. Sirius 964 online, if you're listening that way, and at our website, stevebick.com. Beautiful, almost springy. Wait a minute. Oh, what do you mean almost spring? It is spring, right? It's spring today. Am I right? Is it? Yeah, March 21st. I think it's spring. hadn't really thought about it until I looked down and, you know, I thought, all right, it's getting here. I guess it is. Well, happy spring. The weekend flew by, I got to tell you. And part of it was because Tina and I were running around. We zipped to Rochester, got to see the baby. You got to go see not just the baby, the infant, but not such an infant. He's six months old, I guess. But I missed the birthday party, the big 2-year-old birthday party. We had to go see the baby, so that was fun. Actually, really nice, and the timing ended up being good because I got to watch the action and play. Tina drove back, and everything was going swimmingly. Sort of, until that nightcap at Oaklawn. We'll get to that, actually, because it's kind of part of the morning, you know, recap. Part of the challenges and frustrations of horseplay that, you know, some are, you know, I guess more than some are out of your control. When it goes to the steward stand, and you get plenty of that. And then when you deal with, you know, you deal with animals that are high strung and problematic. To me, you know, part of the, you know, Friday, starting on Friday with that call at Santa Anita, that DQ of the D'Amato Flint Stroll. And you know, the real annoyance that came with that, you know, 6-5 favorite that, you know, got placed second because Cedillo had inadvertently struck Barnfield, the Ronis Sadler that Joe Bravo was riding. They put that horse up. California, you don't, in New York, you have to, when there's an inadvertent whip strike, you know, inadvertently comes down, you know, wheelhouse or someone's wielding the crop and it strikes a foe. It's automatic, but that's not the case everywhere. And so that was the complaint in California, that they didn't necessarily have to take that horse down. So that'll make you crazy. And then on Saturday, Pharaoh's Heart, who... Listen, they have to put him in the gate. They have to run, and you know, 2-5 shots, 3-5 shots have to win, and they get beat all the time. However, I mean, if ever you were sitting confidently, you know, live to a horse, and in many cases singled to a horse, I mean, I certainly was, and I did have a backup. Ticket, and it's funny because it ended up being on the horse that became the favorite when Pharaoh's Heart acted up in the gate and then broke through the gate. And, you know, it's funny. You're sitting there watching in the car, and at first I kind of had looked away, actually, and I looked back, and I saw her come through the gate. And I thought, but then when I saw them back a horse or two out, I thought, oh, my God, they're going to scratch this horse. And I was live. Personally, I was live for a dollar. So it was close to, it was coming back 640 something and change. And, this was the horse, for those that were watching the feed, this was the horse that Asmussen was handling himself. The little red feather starter. And he's doing that. I mean, she's, kind of got a reputation as a bad actor. And Steve was essentially grooming her himself, walking her around the ring, in that paddock at Oaklawn. You never want to sit there and think, oh, I can't lose, because obviously you can. And this was almost like a new way. This was like a new way to lose, to have that horse scratch at the gate. To compound matters, you don't hear me talk too often about, quote unquote, bad beats and such. But I try to take them in stride, and I try to set a good example. I'm just answering a text. The cross country pick five. There was a scratch in New York. The second leg. And so when there was the scratch, I had been playing around. It was Six Lilies that came out. And so I had to rework, or at least, slightly change. And I ended up, wanting to include Reggae Music Man, who was outposted in the 12, and, who I certainly had considered anyway, especially at what could have been, what felt like a potential to be a decent price, 8-1. But, Scocciatore and Bustin' Timberlake, they seemed pretty, pretty obvious. I tried to get Money in the Bank involved as a price, and that's probably a decision that ended up costing $3,300. That sequence, and I was watching RTN, so that I could keep track of the stakes at Laurel as well on Saturday. I'm not sure if Mig was on. But, you had that Psychedelic Shack. It only felt like there were really two horses you needed to use at Tampa. And the first are from Clement, Psychedelic Shack. Even money and comes through and motors late. And then you had the two stakes at Oaklawn. So really that, and I didn't think that you had to get all that clever. We did well with Rated R Superstar, who, used as the second choice and the best value and got $18. Bob's Edge, you had to use Bob's Edge in the Whitmore. I picked Plainsman and had Rated R Superstar as the second choice as a value play. Those were my two A's, and used three A's in the Whitmore as well, with Bob's Edge, Greeley and Ben, and Tulane Trist. So those were, I didn't think, all that tough. Was happy that I included Lady Scarlet, who paid well. So Reggae Music Man essentially, moved up from, you know, a consideration into the body of selections, and I didn't use. I was absolutely, you know, Tina saw my annoyance. What's wrong? I said I left this horse off. I ended up moving them in, moving Reggae Music Man in, paid $12, 5-1, and this thing paid $3,300. I was a little miffed already that that I had botched that ticket. I spent I think $108 on the main play and a backup ticket, and you know, to use Reggae Music Man, you know, kicks the total investment up to, I think, 144, probably 96. Yeah, 96. Yeah, 96 and 48. You don't hear me grouse like this too often, but this was, I mean, this paid very well. $3,300. So, you know, you're thinking to yourself, all right, let's regroup, or let's, you know, all right, you know, we got other opportunities. And the other opportunities was Oaklawn. So that first leg of the pick five, you know, where I think everybody in the world pretty much agreed that Plausible Denial was going to be, you know, was going to be a play, and in some cases a key. You know, then you get to Battle Call and maybe General Strike. That Skate to Heaven, you know, Diodoro has woken up here in the last week. And, you know, after really, I mean, just couldn't win. A lot of seconds and had, you know, bunch of thirds. And the horses were, you know, they just weren't winning. And, you know, that scenario has a tendency, like a pendulum, to come back the other way. And that's exactly what happened. And here was Skate to Heaven, who had gotten back, you know, to a good effort, a better effort last time, had to improve, I thought, considerably to win. So all right, so you get knocked out of the pick five. All right, last shot, pick four, and you know, put together a pick four ticket for small money. And yes, because Pharaoh's Heart is a single. You get there and you're live for, you know, 640 something for 50 cents each. I had it for a buck. So it's a 1300. So I figure, all right, this, you know, let's get this done. And, you know, missed the 3300. Fair enough. But this would be a nice consolation prize. And next thing you know, you got nothing. I mean, really, less than nothing. Because not only do you not get the 1300, you're ready to kick the cat. So, I thought you know, this was one of those weekends a little bit where you think, oh, what else is going wrong? Now, to the same degree, when it comes to the stewarding portion of the equation from Santa Anita Friday, and the, you know, people are obviously, you know, hyper sensitive, and when it comes to frustration with the stewarding overall, but particularly it seems in California, they a lot of people's eyes, they can't do anything right. But for those of you that, you know, they want to say, my favorite saying, oh, only in racing. Well, I don't know how much basketball you watched over the weekend. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm going to guess, you know, fair amount. The officiating, in some cases, was so horrific and embarrassing. It was inexplicable in many cases. Whether it was, you know, the two extremes, calling it too tight, calling it not tight enough. How about the what I can't remember, I mean, because there's so many games you watch, but how about the ball out of bounds that, you know, thank God they can go watch a replay. There was one looking right at the two players. Which game was this? Must have been on Saturday. It's on Saturday. One of the tight games. It was unbelievable how obvious it was off whose hands the last to touch it. But I mean, there was some officiating that just, you know, because of course until recently you couldn't really bet on it. Wink, wink. Now you can bet on it. So you know, it's one thing to sit there and be disgusted by, you know, what looks to be bad, you know, bad refereeing. But this was, I mean, this to me, it seemed every time I looked up, there was another example. Went through this during the NFL season, during the NFL playoffs too. I mean, so it's not just our stewards. It's not just, you know, it's just not the errant call here or there. I mean, it's, I don't know if you call it an epidemic, but, yeah. Unbelievable. So, I'd love to tell you how much I'm certainly very proud of the Maroon and their effort Friday night, or should I say Saturday morning? How about that Colgate Wisconsin game is scheduled to start at 10:50, starts at 11. Excuse me, 9:50, starts at 11. The game before it, it was that the Iowa State game, it would not end. You know, it's one thing for a game, it's 6 minutes, 8 minutes. That game wouldn't end. Just kept. And didn't even go to overtime. It was regulation. And I'm sitting there half asleep. Tina had gone to bed because we had to get to Rochester by like 8 a.m. So we had to leave here like at 4. So, it's 11, and I got toothpicks holding my eyes open. So I had to watch, actually, I was lucky because the DVR didn't work. I had the DVR set. That didn't employ. So when I went to go, I fell asleep. I mean, I fell asleep. I missed a good portion of the, most of the second, all the second half, really. I mean, I was half sort of groggy. So I get up at 3. And Teen's like, you know, because we had scheduled we wanted to get out of the house by 4. So I said, I got to go watch the game. I go downstairs and the DVR hadn't taken. So quite luckily, I got, there was the replay of it that we caught in Rochester, actually, which was, so at least I got to see, you know, quite a bit of it. And they played well. It's funny, I knew that Wisconsin wasn't, they weren't going to beat the Clones on yesterday. So that was, got a little something. But, it's still fun, you know, when you're a school the size of Colgate, you get to go, you know, now I don't want to say a regular basis, but, you know, to be showcased like that is quite nice. And the hockey team played very well Friday afternoon. Did get to watch that. They got beat by Quinnipiac, who then got shocked by Harvard. Yeah, so that was there was college action and lots of Raider sports and then everybody else's basketball and then our racing. You know, when it came to the actual results, talk about that for a little bit. It's hard not to be excited and delighted as I tweeted, for Danny Caldwell. And I'm waiting to hear back when Danny can maybe join us this morning, because as you heard, whether you with us actually at the HBPA, we talked to Danny and you know, talked about the fact that with as many wins as he's had as an owner, he hadn't won a graded stake. He'd had a bunch of placements, and now he's got a graded stake win. The nine-year-old. How great is that? Rated R superstar, the Kodiak Cowboy, gelding, was just, you could see mid-stretch, he was winning. He was storming down the center of the track. And, you know, we'll get a chance, obviously, in the Oakland Handicap as he continues down the series. But to win a grade three like this at 9 years old, very, very cool. And, you know, 8-1 was a fabulous price. Really good price. That was very odd how Warriors charge 3-2? Come on. That I didn't get at all. I thought you could, you know, you had to respect Warriors charge. But let's be honest, he had, you know, essentially had run in that allowance race to kind of right the ship and you know, pick up his head a little. To me, it Plainsman, who has just been super consistent for Brad Cox and John Ed Anthony, himself a 7-year-old, he ran great again, and you know, was right up on it and looked a winner for, you know, maybe mid-stretch, but then, you know, suddenly was confronted and Thomas Shelby was plugging away. But rated our superstar. Hey, it's not often, I'm just noticing this, it's not often you see this. You had a 7-horse field, Title Ready ended up scratching, and he himself is a 7-year-old. Rated our superstar, 9. Plainsman, 7. Beaulieu, 6. Thomas Shelby, 6. Warriors Charge, 6. Popular Kid, 8. Hanalei's Houdini, 6. So, unbelievable, actually. 4 6-year-olds, a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 9-year-old. Who says horses don't stay around? Right? Easy. Well, and of course, the whole weekend, I mean, the whole Saturday, and they had a big crowd again Saturday at Oaklawn. It was about, you know, horses that, it was kind of a celebration when you, you know, talk about Whitmore, right? That was a big part of the whole underpinning of the day. But for Danny Caldwell, David Cabrera aboard, and Freddie Villafranco, you know, has had this. When did they claim this horse off of Contreras? Last January, 50,000, and that's the fourth win that they've enjoyed, including the Governor's Cup and the fifth season. But now graded stake, and of course, you know what? Should really go back and look at the. The formulator PPs. When I print the PPs, I like Andy and I discussed this. He wants the formulator PPs for the full, you know, for the full career. I don't do that. I go for, you know, the standard classic PPs with, what, 12 lines. But easy enough to go and take a look, because this is really an amazing, it's had an amazing career. I mean, McPeak, who started with him, and you go back to the two-year-old year, won at second asking at Ellis. Interestingly, he got beat by Unbridled Outlaw, who you'll recall for Dale, the just, what would you call him, star-crossed, I suppose, Unbridled Outlaw. And that was also at Ellis in 2015. God, feels like a million years ago. Second in the Iroquois to Cocked and Loaded. That was Ravelli. And then third in the Breeders' Futurity to Brody's Cause and Exaggerator. that's what's great about a horse like this. I mean, to think about who he ran against. And of course, in the juvenile, he went to the juvenile, which didn't go well. And 24-1 in the juvenile at Keeneland in 2015. Yeah, that's American Pharaohs. I mean, that's how long ago this is. It's crazy. Beaten by Nyquist, of course, in there, and then back as a. He actually came back and McPeak ran him again in the Kentucky Jockey Club, which certainly didn't need to. In their Aero Force, More Spirit, and Motom were 1, 2, 3. I mean, it's like, right? This is like a time capsule. comes back later on and as a three-year-old and didn't really, it seems like Ken had, I don't know, it doesn't feel like he kind of as a three-year-old got things going. He did win the carry back, interestingly. But then the King's Bishop, Drafong beat him there. And then kind of fell into essentially the same pattern that he's subsequently, at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 for the next 6 seasons. It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. You know, 62-5 type claiming races and, optional claiming and money allowances, that kind of thing. Won the Ben Ally. But actually, that was the only win between the carry back and being claimed. The carry back came July of 16, and then you go to November of 18. So over 2 years, he had just 2 wins from that point. An allowance win at Oaklawn in the slop and the Ben Ally later that spring. He was in decent form there. And from that point, it was Contreras and Crystal Racing and same kind of stuff. Lots of Oaklawn, steady diet of Oaklawn, Razorback, the Temperance Hill, the 5th season. Looks like he first met up with, that's interesting, he first met up with Warrior's Charge in the 2020 Razorback. Just a crazy career. Amazing. Just amazing. For Contreras, won the Essex. Only one win, actually, for Contreras. Number of placements. But Villafranco, since the claim for $50,000 with Danny, he's really been steady. Really been very steady. Last year in the Oaklawn handicap didn't go so great. Got beat 10 lengths third to, I mean, the Knicks go is the 10 lengths in the Cornhusker last summer. But He's been very, very good. And now Danny, you know, who just has got so many horses that he's involved in. We asked him at the HBPA convention, and I think he said 80. It's a special win, not just because it's the first graded stake, but it's a special win because you can tell that Danny Caldwell's got a special affection for this horse, as he should, right? So, Rated R Superstar, looking ahead to the, I imagine, to the Oakland Handicap. In the Whitmore, speaking of, you know, special horses and the celebration on Saturday, saw tons of, my God, so many people with their, you know, with their clips and photos and, you know, just in some cases, you know, people that have been going to Oaklawn forever. In some cases, people there for the first time. In the Whitmore, Bob's Edge, who languished a little early, was really unhurried. And Luis Quinones absolutely, it didn't look like he ever, you know, was ever worried about Bob's Edge getting involved. And then all of a sudden, you know, he made that extended rush and reached contention quickly and then blew by everybody. Greeley and Ben, you know, ran valiantly. Ended up third. Hollis took the money. I was a little against Hollis. I did not include him actually in the plays. He's a horse that at this point, you know, he's sort of alternating, you know, performances, and you know, he regressed off that monster win in December in the King Cotton. Then he ran well again in an allowance, and I kind of thought, you know what, we're going to play this as if we can expect a reaction. You know, Tulane Trist, who was a popular potential price at 9-2, took money, ended up going off as the third choice. It was Bob's Edge. You know, Bob's Edge, I mean, if you were looking to prefer a recent effort, it felt to me that Bob's Edge's race in the King Cotton, you know, that felt more likely to be repeated. So here's another, by the way, right? Every week we keep talking about four-year-olds being added to the handicap roles. I mean, this is the sprint roles, but we're going to talk to Larry Jones in about an hour or so. We'll talk to him next hour. And we'll get a little bit more. You know, this is a steady improver, a competitive edge gelding. Michael and Patricia Freeney, as well as Jennifer Grayson Taylor. Paid $760 in here. So we'll hear from Larry and find out more. And notable, too, we should add as part of the discussion, career best figure in here on the buyer scale, 98 for Bob's Edge. So a tick above the 97 he recorded in his seasonal debut. So this feels like a horse that, you know, could be heard from. You're going to see potentially now, you know, now that he's established this benchmark in a grade three. Looking ahead, it's out of a bluegrass cap mare, West Wind Farm. So we'll find out about the backstory as well. It's a six-time winner. and just kind of spoon-fed it a little bit, it seems. Has won on the turf, too. Won that race at Keeneland. Money allowance in the fall. So versatile, kind of a versatile sprint type. Bob's Edge, Talain Triss second, Greeley and Ben third, Hollis ended up fourth after setting the pace. So those were your big the two big, the only graded stakes, right, of the weekend. Yeah, it was as we had said, it's kind of a placeholding weekend. Let's poke around, actually. Got a couple of minutes. And looking at New York. Let's go to New York. I mentioned the Reggae Music Man win, but that Lady Scarlet. And the Mike Maker Barn, clicking along. The Cicada, Union Rags, Philly, and this was a nice price, 6-1. I'm not sure why the second timer, and actually Manshun, I wasn't necessarily against Manshun. I just, you know, seasonal debut and even with improvement, I don't know. I preferred the recency. And so Lady Scarlet second off the layoff and coming off of, you know, coming up from Oaklawn. Plus she was going to be a decent price. So Lady Scarlet and came with authority and Manshun and Rosebug chasing her home, but Lady Scarlet with Kendrick Carmouche. I mentioned those Laurel Stakes. I was watching those. We talked about it was fun to get Callie Francois on the show on Friday. Mostly talked about the private terms, because that it kind of felt like the most interesting of these stakes, and you did have a decent price, 5-1. Shake 'em Loose and Joe, the Trombetta Stuart Grant favorite and homebred, the Declaration of War, looking for a four straight win, was kind of, I don't know, probably have to, I only watched it live. I didn't watch a replay, didn't watch it a second time, but it had to be ridden along. It might be, and you know, might be one of those horses that has to be ridden for success, but at even money, tried to make a race of it, but you know, only got within, I don't know, a couple of lengths, really, length and a half on the chart in the stretch. And Shake 'em Loose, Charlie Marquez, just basically kept Joe at bay to win. This is a Shaking It Up gelding. Pilar Property Services bred this one. Was a $1,000. Wow. Unbelievable. How about that? Was a $1,000 yearling at Timonium Fall. Originally. Hammy Smith had this horse and eventually broke the maiden for 16 and was claimed by Rodolfo Sanchez Solomon and J.R. Sanchez Racing. Nice. This horse won nicely, and managed to tick up another notch on the buyer front up to 83. So this, of course, a lead in to the Tessio, and the Tessio will get you a free pass into the Preakness. Earlier, that Luna Belle, speaking of Hammy Smith. And Luna Belle was going to be the shortest price of the day at Laurel. Luna Belle, 1-5, and one like it. The Great Notion. Homebred. The Harrison Johnson. This won by the Fast Anna Gelding. Don't Mesa with me. Kind of chasing the pace a little bit and staying in contact, and won at a square price, 18-1. Nice. That was in the Johnson, and Where She Told Me to Go, Brittany Russell, the El Padrino Gelding, himself a 7-year-old these days, wins the Not for Love with Heavy on Toledo, that for Sal Cumin and Ten Strike and Michael Kisber and BTR Racing. And what was the other? There was one more. Oh, the Conniver. That Fee d'Esprit at 70 cents on the dollar for Jerry Robb. Another Great Notion, the 6-year-old mare. She won off by 8 lengths under the X-Man. All right, that was Laurel. There we go. All right, almost. Let me slip in this. How about, where is it? I know I had it because I was actually surprised on Friday that neither James or Shap talked about the race at Turfway. The Queen. And there it is. This was, to me, this was interesting. I mean, I told, we mentioned that, you know, Club Car had been kind of bandied about entering two different races before finally getting to run. Club Car showed up here, but was not the favorite, was going to compete for favoritism with Caravelle. And in her first start as a 5-year-old, the Mizzen Mass mare, now owned by Qatar Racing and Mark DeTample, and with Brad Cox. And a long string of works getting ready for this. And she kind of returned, got, you know, kind of got her form back setting some square fractions and winning easily, really. She went off at even money. Club Car chased to no avail. And Corrales aboard for Brad Cox. So that gets her back in the win column after what had to be a very frustrating period where she tried some deep waters, including going up to Canada on the Woodbine mile card, and the Turf Sprint, etc. So, Turf Monster, I was there for that, actually, Parks. And then went back through the ring and new ownership. So maybe she's back on the beam. And she actually, it's interesting, she hadn't wired. You got to go back a little bit. You got to go back to early in her career, really. her second win against State Breds. She's also notably 3-for-3 on synthetic. She won twice for Liz Merriman at Presque Isle. She won the Lady Erie, and she won the Malvern Rose. So she's perfect on the synthetic. Interesting. We'll see what Brad Cox, when we talk to Brad next, we'll see what his thoughts are and what he's going to do with her. I thought that I thought that was worth noting. Here's one other stray PP that caught the eye. Brett Calhoun, and certainly Calhoun on Saturday. We're going to talk next about the draw at Sunland and at Fairgrounds for Saturday and Sunday. Of course, it's Derby weekend in both venues. And in advance, Brett, who's got, of course got Hidden Connection, coming back in the Fairground Oaks where Echo Zulu I'm going to be the focus, as you might imagine. But how about the Spitestown filly that Brett Calhoun unveiled, four-year-old filly? I'm looking forward to talking to Brett about where this downtown, as opposed to, I think there's another Downton Abbey movie coming out, right? Yeah. Tina made me a fan. She dragged me into it, and I must admit, it's quite engaging. So now, you know, we're just seeing how long they'll keep Granny alive. But Downtown Abbey, Spitestown, that was bred by Mount Brilliant. And she was a May foal. I want to hear from Brett about this one. And out of an arch mare, she was an $80,000 yearling. So it took a while to get her to the races, but boy, she looked like a real horse winning on Saturday, early on the Fairgrounds card. So I'm sure we'll talk to Brett, and we'll get some details. Keep an eye, 89 buyer for that debut. So just, you know, kind of tells you, be patient. California, we should slip in. I talked about the DQ. How about talking about something, you know, something positive? The results in the Irish O'Brien. You had the two downhill events over the weekend. Eddie's New Dream, and that was exciting. Beat Becca Taylor, the 4-5 favorite of Steve Miotti's for Can't Say No Nick. For Ben Cecil and the Redhams, homebred of theirs, a square Eddie filly. Eddie's New Dream. And then yesterday, always happy for Craig Lewis to do well. And the last stake of the weekend, a Brickyard Ride, wire to wire with Juan Hernandez. So, the homebred of Alfred Pace. Clubhouse Ride, 5-year-old, of course, and down the hill. Quite nice. Good job. Johnny with Indian Peak. Chased home. And there you go. All right. I think... Oh, yesterday, the Haynesfield. Water's Edge. David Donk. And... that was a nice performance. I should slip that in, right? That was the other stake on Sunday. And I was unabashedly rooting for Gary and Eddie with Lobster, and who did go favored. A couple of ticks below Chestertown and My Boy Tate. And the thing was billed as kind of a, you know, Lobster, My Boy Tate rematch. But in fact, Water's Edge broke well, and Vargas, very nice job kind of metting out the fractions. This is the one-turn mile, and turned back every advance. Anybody that came to probe Water's Edge, turned them all back, and then widened late. And 10-20, fourth choice in here. So congratulations to David Donk and Empire Equine, who bred this Candy Ride colt out of a bluegrass catmare. And actually, one of the other winners that we talked about today that I'm noticing, Bob's Edge, I think, out of a bluegrass catmare. May have to let's jot that down for Sid. I'm curious. Bluegrass cat as a broodmare sire. Let's go to the stats. and finally, another stake sequence I didn't add. Yes, I Am Free. In the Silks Run, and Spirit Wind, Ralph Nix in the Any Limit, and Provocateur in the Hutchison, the Gulfstream sequence of stakes you'd mentioned with Mike on Friday. Before we reach for Rich Migliori, let me give you a glance ahead. And certainly with the early draws for both Sunland on Sunday and Fairgrounds on Saturday, we'll have plenty of time, and it should be fun to dig into these cards. Obviously, Fairgrounds a little bit more the focus, but the Sunland, I don't know. We'll see. The Sunland race, Sunland Oaks, Sunland Derby, some New Mexico. They got the Breeders, a couple of Breeders Stakes. They got that nice Memorial race. I don't know how many of you, I hope some of you, a lot of you must remember Bill Thomas. It's very nice that they have a race for Bill Thomas. Louisiana Derby. I already mentioned Hidden Connection and Echo Zulu. Just a field of six in the Oaks. Turner Luce comes back, the surprise winner for the Thrashes, and Brad Cox of the Rachel Alexandra in her three-year-old debut. She'll be at least a decent price again here. Would think no worse than third choice, but Sequist, second off the layoff in here too, as her three-year-old season continues, or stakes debut for three-year-old. Berna Breezy, Matt Shearer, who was conservative, didn't, after the nice effort in the Silver Bullet Day, backed her up, didn't contest the Rachel, ran on Friday instead, remember, and she won well. So now she gets, the big audition. Todd Pletcher shows up with a Stone Street purchase, the $500,000 Pioneer, the Nile, making her stakes debut favorite. So Echo Zulu, Turner Luce, Favor, Berna Breezy, Sequist, and Hidden Connection. Not a big group, but a nice group. All right, the Louisiana Derby, for those that didn't see the draw and haven't caught up yet, you can print the whole thing out now. Epicenter, it will be a short-priced favorite in here. And it seemingly, even with the presence, I suppose, of Zozos, little bit of Pioneer of Medina as well coming back. But if Pioneer of Medina wasn't able to, what magic happens, between the Risen Star and now, chased and really had no response through even fractions against Epicenter. So we'll see. But Epicenter draws the six for Joel. And I think it'll be easy to know where to look to find Epicenter. from the rail, Silent Power, Scott Gellner. After a trip to Delta in the in the big drama stretches out here and stretches out considerably. It's a lot to ask. This is a mile and 3/16 to remember. This is 9.5 furlongs. It's not. This is the Preakness distance. This is not a mile and an eighth. So an extra, you know, an extra half furlong, and has never been beyond a mile. And that was the one turn mile, actually, at Churchill. So silent power. And is more of a closing sprinter. Isn't even really a sprinter that on the stretch out you're going to expect to be involved in the pace. Gerard Melanson, gee money, aboard. Zozos making the third career start off of the allowance romp at Oaklawn in February. This is for the Butzows and a homebred, Munnings of theirs. You know, won it first asking at Fairgrounds. So it does have the win at Fairgrounds. And Florent Giroux back aboard. Call Me Midnight, of course, who sat out from the LeCompte to now, bypassing the Risen Star. And that was Keith DeSormo's plan. He that was established right after the LeCompte. James Graham. And, you know, he was ready in the LeCompte to pounce on the fast pace, but it's hard to envision a big pace here. Dallas Stewart with the Curlin maiden breaker for Mr. Horton, the homebred for Willis Horton. Curly Tail. Colby Hernandez gets aboard. And certainly Curly Tail will relish, you know, the distance and a horse that, you know, after the calendar turned, it became a 3-year-old, started to show something. And the maiden breaker last time, he'll be a price. Kapuna, here's Brett Calhoun, another stake debuter. Chased Cyberknife home, you'll recall, on Risen Star Day. 82 buyer in there. Before that, had broken the maiden going the mile at Oaklawn. This is a hard spun out of a Malibu Moon mare. Kapuna for Sanders and Hirsch, longtime Calhoun client. Epicenter and Joel for Ron Winchell, who's obviously got a rather big day, potentially Saturday. Pioneer of Medina for Sumaya. Todd Pletcher, Tyler Gaffleone, who's riding favor as well in the Oaks. Tyler Gaffleone coming to town for the Pioneer of Medina ride. Galt, the first of the two Mott incident exiters out of the Fountain of Youth. Larry Best's Medaglia d'Oro, $400,000 yearling out of the Fountain of Youth in High Oak in 2 weeks in the Wood. But Junior Alvarado gets back aboard. Junior broke the maiden on Galt. For Bill Mott, of course, and Rattle and Roll, Kenny McPeak, after what can only be termed, I think, a disappointment in the Fountain of Youth, comes back and tries to recapture that Breeders' Futurity 2-year-old form, and certainly worked sharp at Gulfstream getting ready. 58-4 bullet for this. So there you go. Derby day at Fairgrounds. Had such fun on Risen Star Day. The New Orleans Classic, the Grade 2 Olympiad. Bill Mott enjoying what really is as strong a hand as you could think of in recent years, right? Speaker's Corner and everything else. So, and of course the Muniz as well on the turf, mile and an eighth. Haven't checked the forecast. Hope the weather's going to be all right. You got a nice group. Got a group of nine, I think. Yeah, group of nine. A lot of familiar faces. Chad sends in Sacred Life. You've got the Connolly winner, another mystery for Chris Block. Chad's also got Devamani, too, coming out of the Tampa Bay. Cavalry Charge comes back out of the fairgrounds. Win, 2 Emmys. Santin, who another couple of jumps might have won that fairgrounds. So terrific maiden races lined up as well on the card. Very, very, if you haven't looked at it, very nice. You've got the Benson. You know who comes back on Saturday, too, is the Asmussen Marsalis out of that wild maiden race where Steve had promised that Marsalis was going to break 110. He did. Except there was a problem with that. It wasn't good enough, right? Yeah, there's 4 maiden races on the card, and that one comes, where does this come? Comes as the seventh, yeah. And drew the rail for this one. And of course, Momentous was the one that beat him. So there's some other firsters. There's some new faces, but including Strobe for Brad Cox, Into Mischief, Godolphin Homebred. But you would think Marsalis will be highly favored by many. Vinco tries to come back off that big disappointment on Risen Star Day, the $1.5 million quality road. So there you go. And the Sunland Derby, straight up G for Jungle Racing, right? Jim Rome, homebred, straight fire, cowbred, won the Mind That Bird. You got the Turf Paradise winner, Chrome King in this spot. Slow Down Andy for Doug O'Neill out of the Risen Star. Todd Fincher, you can't run this without Todd Fincher. Bye-bye, Bobby. And Asmussen, he's got a pair. He's got Classic Moment coming out of the Mind That Bird. And Costa Terra, who, of course, you saw in the Southwest and then ran in an allowance race and seems to be kind of in neutral, Costa Terra. Drew the rail. There's also Fowler Blue for Louis Mendez. Calbred, Carlin to Mischief, Calbred, and Pepper Spray, Edward Kereluk as well, Sunland Derby. So, all right, you're getting long-range forecast, as it were, right? Sunland and Fairgrounds. Let's take a break here, top of the hour. Rich Migliori is going to join us and get things really rolling. Got Larry Jones in a little bit. Leif Aaron is going to join us. Leif is at Facing Tipton and is handling their digital sales. There's a digital sale going on right now. You may not have realized. Started on Thursday, I believe, and ends tomorrow. And this is, of course, an increasingly significant and notable portion of the sales landscape, and I thought let's get him on here and find out. He worked at TaylorMade and had an interesting background. So, Leif Aaron from Phasic and more. Stay with us. Hour 2, Rich Migliori next.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. 4 brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred 2-year-olds. There are 2 $100,000 contests on August 22nd. PA Day at the races. September 24th, PA Derby Day has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents.